why that might be the case. Realised it's exactly 9 months after Valentine's Day from Henry. And finally, this one. It is my 56th birthday today. Chilling with a brew. Still think I'm 28. Body thinks otherwise. Happy birthday to everyone else celebrating today. That's from Steph. Thank you, Steph.
Thank you, Rachel. I got you a present.
Oh, my goodness.
Before I go off and we stop working today, you were mentioning your witch's hair.
My witch's hair. Claire has given me tweezers. But who will operate the tweezers, Claire? That's what I need to know.
I can help you.
Would you mind?
I don't mind.
Thank you.
BBC Radio 5 Live. Nikki Campbell. The voice of the UK.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to the nation's phone-in. Thanks to Claire and Rach. We are, of course, this morning keeping a very close eye on Lebanon and Israel. The Israeli military says it hit around 75 Hezbollah targets in southern Lebanon and the Bekaa region overnight. We'll try and get a sense of what's happening from our correspondents on the ground. Main discussion in our first hour, tuition fees, student debt. Is the system fair? Do you think it is? The big drop-off at uni for many kids recently, of course. I remember being dropped off by my parents at Aberdeen University as if it was yesterday. Well, the day before yesterday, except back then the government gave me money. They paid me to go. This is the ancient history. And I had a grant. There was a maximum grant. There was a minimum grant. I was about halfway. That was means tested as well for living expenses. Let's fast forward to now and to the future. Same feelings for young people embarking on a new life full of possibilities and discoveries and self-discoveries and full of promise, full of independence, full of debt, as my girls will testify. Any Campbells, free to call in. An independent think tank has parked on the college lawn, coming up with some very interesting proposals. A radical overhaul of student loans and university funding in England. For example, it suggests a 20-year rather than 40-year repayment term on student loans, no increase in terms of the amount owed, as well as a minimum loan repayment of £10 after graduation. The Higher Education Policy Institute wants to see better maintenance support, a national insurance charge for graduate employees. Tuition fees in England have been capped at £9,250 since 2017. Fees different in Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland. Free tuition fees in Scotland. Struggling there with finances, the government. Education devolved. Keir Starmer promised to support scrapping fees during the Labour leadership campaign. He won the leadership and he abandoned the pledge. Now, last week, Universities UK, which represents 141 UK universities, said higher tuition fees and direct government funding are needed to halt a growing deficit so the sector doesn't slide into decline. They are cash strapped. What about you? You know, your debt going ahead, someone in your family. Is the system fair? Tell me. 2 minutes past nine.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Call free 08085 909 693. Text 85058. Text will be charged at your standard message rate. Message on WhatsApp 08085 909 693. Visit bbc.co.uk/5liveterms for our terms of use and privacy notice.
And here's the news from Dina Campbell.
Thank you, Nikki. Good morning. The US and the UK have joined other allies in calling for an immediate 21-day ceasefire on the Israel-Lebanon border, where there's been an escalation in fighting. In a joint statement, they describe the situation there as intolerable. Meanwhile, the Israeli military says it hit around 75 Hezbollah targets in southern Lebanon and the Bekaa region overnight. An 18-year-old man has been charged with the murder of teenager Dejon Campbell, who was stabbed to death in southeast London on Sunday. Police were called to a disturbance in Woolwich on Sunday evening and found the 15-year-old with stab wounds. Despite efforts from paramedics, he died a short time later. The Ministry of Justice says that almost 40 prisoners who'd breached restraining orders were wrongly let out of jail under the government's early release scheme. It says most are now back in prison and it's working urgently to return the remaining five to custody. An independent think tank has suggested a radical overhaul of student loans and university funding in England to make the system fairer. The Higher Education Policy Institute wants to see better maintenance support and a national insurance charge for graduate employers.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker
to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Nikki Campbell.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
I mean, tuition fees, student debt, such a political... potent political hot potato for a long, long time. Nick Clegg, call us if you like. Branwyn Jeffries, the BBC's education editor, joins us. Good morning, Branwyn.
Good morning. It's such a massive issue for families, isn't it? Not just the tuition fees, Nikki, but the cost of living. Do you know there's been a recent estimate it costs £18,000 a year for a student to have a decent standard of living to get by at university? If you've got two kids at university, that is an awful lot of money to find.
Yeah, I know. And that's why so many students have extra jobs. I mean, that's not always possible. And that's going to take away from their studies too. And going ahead, what about the debt? How does that work? Let's just concentrate on England for now, and voices welcome as ever from all over the UK. But how does the system work for those who do not know?
So there's a few key things that sometimes get lost in all the noise around this. Firstly, we've somehow ended up in England, because of changes in recent years, with a system that the graduates who earn the most pay back less than the graduates who earn the least. And that is a very strange outcome, which has added to the sense of unfairness around the system. That's because basically if you graduate, you go into one of those really well-paying jobs like working in IT finance or as a lawyer perhaps ultimately, or a doctor ultimately, although your debt is large, you have the income to pay back, and you pay back 9% over the threshold of £25,000 of earnings. So that is one of the things that this is trying to address by cutting the repayment term from 40 years, which is a recent change, down to 20 years, which would make it a much more level playing field in terms of how people pay back. And it suggests that those who earn the most should pay a little bit more. They should pay a little bit of a top up on their payments. So for the highest earning graduates, they would pay an extra interest rate if they were earning over £60,000.
Okay. You know, going ahead, a lot of students are having a lot of debt. When the system was originally designed, though, Bronwyn, it'd be great to hear from parents, great to hear from students, great to hear from you if you went through this system. I predate it. You don't, perhaps. Yeah, I mean, a lot of students paying this, and they really are suffering. But when it was first designed, I remember them telling us, this is much fairer.
So there was a social contract, if you like, that was implicit in the system when it was set up and when they went to the £9,000 fees in 2012. And part of that was a system of maintenance grants for the poorest students, those who can't call on the bank of mum and dad for their £10,000 a year rent and all their other living costs. What happened in 2016 is that grants were scrapped in England and replaced with loans. So we now have a situation where the students from the lowest income families are ending up with the biggest debt when they leave university, because they're borrowing tuition fees and they're taking out the maximum loans, as well as quite possibly, as you suggested, doing a job on top of that. So that has been one of the big shifts in terms of fairness, that we're not giving as much support. And even the loans in England have not kept pace in the last couple of years with the cost of living pressures that every single family is seeing around food, around heating, around the cost of housing. So they've fallen behind. And it's been described by independent economists at the Institute for Fiscal Studies as a bit of a tax on students, effectively, that their support, particularly if they're having to rely on those loans, has not kept up with the day-to-day costs of supporting themselves at university.
Yeah, there ain't no going back, though. I mean, in Scotland, where tuition fees are free, and without going into the weeds of that particular system, the government is cash-strapped, and there are even people saying, look, we have to, you know, think again about this. So there's no going back to any previous system. The only way is to make sure the universities have more money, surely, because they are really suffering at the moment, 40% particularly so. And so the only futurology of this is more debt for students.
So separate out two things. The debt for students includes their living costs. If we think about tuition fees, which are now the main source of income for universities in England, it is, I think, almost everyone would agree, politically toxic to suggest that they should go up much further right now. There's something about the sense of fairness that's out there amongst students and their families. So you have that on the one hand, and on the other hand, you have universities saying, look, our fees have only gone up by £250 since 2012, and they've got all the rising costs of pay,
so
of pensions.
More foreign students, they're going to get more foreign students in to,
So we've seen a boom. We've seen a boom in foreign students. What's interesting and radical about the proposals today, and it's not the first time this has been suggested, is that given that graduates are highly skilled, they go into the workforce, they bring benefits to employers, that employers should be contributing some of the cost. So this report today suggests 1% on national insurance for graduate employers. That has been suggested before by other people in the last year. It's an idea that's gaining some traction. The big challenge around it, of course, is if you think about who employs graduates, well, it's not just for-profit businesses. It's also the NHS, the police, social workers, teachers. So it would be interesting to see how anyone would think that they could apply this to the public sector, but that would generate some money in the short term in order to help put a sticking plaster, no more than that, over university finances. And I spoke to Tim Lunig, who is...
He's coming on.
Well, great, because he's a highly respected economist. He's a former government advisor. He invented the first furlough scheme. He invented the system for how we give money to schools in England. So he is a big policy brain who thinks about complicated problems and how to solve them. And when I talked through this analysis with him, he's not even mentioning tuition fees in this. He accepts it's utterly toxic to think about tuition fees going up much more right now. And at the same time, he thinks that we will get to the stage, not in this parliament, but in the next parliament, where they will have to be linked to inflation. And that would be potentially more palatable if people felt the system was fairer, with more support for the lowest income students and the people who go on to earn the most, the highest earners, paying back the most.
Just one more, and I've got a great text to read out. And thanks for getting in touch, everybody. And we've got the aforementioned professor, imminent. But one more for you. There has been this increasing thing that we've been hearing from politicians recently. The previous administration in particular started singing this song, kind of making you, it far more kind of utilitarian. You do a degree that gets you a job.
So if you look just at earnings, you get to, which is there's lots of information out there. England has a unique system for knowing how much graduates earn by looking at their tax returns 5 years after they've graduated, 10 years after they graduated. It is no surprise that if you become an economist, a lawyer, a vet, a dentist, have high-end IT or engineering skills, you're at the top end. And if you are studying perhaps textiles, drama, a design-related subject, that you are at the bottom end of the earnings. That has always been the case. It's just more visible to us now. So the question is, how do you balance what we need as an economy? This is a government that's talking, as the last government did, about how we grow our economy. Does the government decide to put more money behind subjects which it thinks are strategically important? Like, do we need more engineers? Do we need more people in biomedical sciences and fewer in arts? Or do we have a system where we really let, as we do now, the students choose? So there is no sign of a falling appetite among 18-year-olds in England for going to university. The proportion, if anything, is very slightly higher than it was before the pandemic. So the appetite from young people is there to go, to have the university experience and to, you know, study whatever they wish. The question is whether all universities and all courses deliver them the best opportunities when they are all charging the same fees. It doesn't matter if you go to one of the most elite universities in terms of research in this country, or you go to a small local university, you will pay the same fee.
Yeah, interesting. A long section, well, a decent section of Keir Starmer's leadership speech was on the power and importance of the arts and culture in our life. He even drops Shostakovich in there, who's...
Well, famously, yeah. Of course, he is very musical. He plays, I think, the flute, the recorder, and at least one other instrument. And they are looking at putting more arts back into schools' education. So there's a clear understanding that the arts have an absolutely crucial role in our society. We're a highly creative economy. We produce fantastic films, music, design, fashion. There has to be a place for that. It's about how you get the balance right and how you fund universities sustainably whilst giving students the choice.
Let me do that text I told you about. Excellent, Bronwyn. This text, anonymous, I teach at a university. It is really tough at the moment. We lost loads of staff over the summer through voluntary redundancy, and those of us left are picking up the pieces. We've just had a 2.5% pay rise when others, like teachers, have had 5.5%. We've had all our hours taken away for staff development, which is shocking. How can you not want to develop your staff? Staff have gone on maternity leave and never been replaced. We're just told we have to work harder. Morale is at rock bottom. We've so many layers of senior management that just seem to go to meetings and change our working conditions, usually not for the better. They've cut the hours we can spend giving essential one-to-one dissertation supervision to our students from 6 hours to 2.5 with no discussion. The student finance system needs to be looked at too. My child has over £80,000 worth of debt for a 4-year degree. We have friends whose child gets an 8,000 grant each year. This is because on paper they have very little income due to retirement. However, their house is on the market for just under £1 million. Student finance needs to look at assets too. As I say, I can't give my name or I will get sacked. It's not a good time to be working in higher education. What a text. Professor Tim Leunig, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
We were hearing all about you, author of this report on undergraduate fees. First off, did you hear that text? What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, my heart goes out to your correspondent. I obviously don't know which university they're in, and I should say it's not that bad in all universities. Some are doing much better than others. Those who have a lot of foreign students are generally in a better place than those who don't, for example. I'm not quite as old as you are, Nikki, but my daughter's also gone through university, and I too understand through her what it can be like to be on the other side and how useful it is, bluntly, to have parents like you and I who can stump up the cost of accommodation and food for our kids.
Yeah, makes all the difference, and we're extremely fortunate. Tell us about some of your ideas.
So the current student loan period is 40 years, and I think that's nuts. So I propose cutting it to 20 years. To make the figure stack up, I'm going to charge all students, or graduates rather, £10 a week, you know, so that they pay more for less time. But to stop them being poorer in the short run, I'm going to let them pay less into their pensions, because very few graduates end up poor in retirement. If they're really worried about that, they can always save more money into their pension once they've stopped paying off their student debt in their early 40s. So that's one half of it. 20-year repayment, get it over and done with, be able to see life beyond it, and a rule that you're debt never goes up year on year. None of that fear that even if you pay money back, it's still getting worse. And then the second half is to charge employers 1% on the salaries of graduates to fund both more money for universities, about 2,000, 2,300 extra student, and to recreate proper maintenance grants. You mentioned that you got a maintenance grant back in the day, Nikki, and so did I. My mum was on free school meals. I got the full grant, and it meant I could go to university in confidence. There's no way my mum could have supported me. I got a full grant. It meant I could study hard. I got a great degree. I got to stay on and do a PhD and get a job in a university. I don't think I could have done that without a maintenance grant. So I'm up for £11,000 of maintenance money, which pretty much means you don't have to work in term time. If you've got 11,000 quid, you're still going to have to work in the vacations, but that's fine. So I think that's a good place to be. So it's a package that offers something for almost everyone. No extra cost to the Treasury, much more money for students when they're studying, shorter repayment period. But yes, employers are going to have to stump up. They're part of the equation. They get part of the benefits. They're part of the solution.
You've worked very hard on this, and there's a lot of very interesting stuff in it. How do you manage to get this under the nose of the Secretary of State?
Well, partly by appearing on this programme. I worked in the civil service for many years, and every day there's a media monitoring service that goes to ministers that tells them what's in the news. So I'm very grateful to you. It means tomorrow morning, Jackie Smith and Bridget Phillipson will be told that this issue was discussed on Radio 5.
That's right.
I keep you wrong. Getting in the media is the best way to get something through to a politician. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And they have people monitoring us. We know that for a fact. Stay there. Professor Ramathura Namachandran, Vice-Chancellor of the University of Canterbury. Good morning.
Good morning, Nikki. Good to be with you.
Yeah, student debt. Going ahead, is the system right now? That was fascinating from Tim, wasn't it? They call it blue sky thinking. Yeah. Is the system fair? Because it's a cloudy sky for a lot of students.
I think the current system as it stands is not sustainable. Not sustainable for the students, not sustainable for universities, and probably not sustainable for the taxpayer. So I think a fundamental rethink of the system is essential. And I think Tim's report published today goes some way, I think, to at least tweaking the system in a way which makes it fairer for students and provides some additional funding for universities. In terms of the students, I have to say, I think reintroduction of the means-tested maintenance grant is probably, for me, the highest priority. The current cost of living crisis is making it very, very difficult for students. And as Branwen said earlier, most of their student loan is taken up funding their accommodation. So there's very little left beyond that. So I guess reintroduction of maintenance grants is, I think, absolutely vital, alongside, I think, looking at funding universities better because the current system simply isn't sustainable. And the anonymous text you read out illustrated some of the challenges, real challenges, universities are facing today.
Absolutely. What are your students saying to you about their lives going ahead and their fears and their concerns?
I think the things which are affecting students most are the cost of living crisis and the impact that is having on their health and well-being, and particularly mental health and well-being of students. So we as a university have to, and all universities I'm sure do the same, spend quite a lot to ensure that we are supporting our students through what is a financial and a health and well-being crisis at the same time.
Fiona in the Southwest coming up as well, and Michael in Bronsgrove. Tim, just a thought. Back in the day when you got the maximum grant, I got kind of halfway down the table, and there were people there who had wealthy parents with minimum grants, but we all had grants. How on earth did the government and how did they afford, and of course tuition was all paid for, how did they afford it back then? Because in the late 70s when I went, those were also cash-strapped times.
They were, but they didn't send many people to university. So the University of Canterbury, whose vice-chancellor you've just been talking to, didn't even exist. Universities like LSE let in far fewer people than they used to. But that was a really bad outcome for society. We know that graduates go on to earn good money later and pay a chunk in tax. They're more likely to found firms and be successful. They're more likely to be successful managers and take companies forward. They're more likely to be the successful engineers who build, you know, really exciting stuff that makes money for this country. Imagine Airbus without any engineers. I mean, it's just a silly idea. Back in the day, teachers didn't have degrees. Would we really want our teachers not to have degrees today? So no, the last thing we want to do is to go back to a world of very few graduates living a lavish lifestyle.
Oh, I've got a feeling, Tim, you've looked into this. Fiona in the Southwest, not real name Fiona, thank you so much for getting in touch. What are your thoughts?
Well, our son graduated in 2020. He did a four-year degree course, and his debt was just over 48,000. 4 years later, it's just over 78,000. So his debt has increased by 30,000. And we're in a situation where he inherited £10,000. And because we're very debt averse, we the first thing you want to think about is, well, should you pay down your student loan? But actually, I've spent a lot of time looking into this. It drives me mad. If he'd paid £10,000 off of his student loan, because you pay 9% of whatever you earn over £27,000 to keep it round, it actually wouldn't have made any difference whatsoever. Monthly payments would still stay the same, and the debt is galloping so far ahead that actually you're better off just having that money and saving it and putting it towards a house deposit.
This is nuts. This is nuts. I mean, I'm not, figures aren't my strong point. And I so admire people who have that facility. But that's why I did history. But, you know, 48,000 to what? Did you say 78,000?
£78,067 today and 75p. So it's gone up £30,000. And I'm not averse to students taking out a debt to pay for their education. I don't have a problem with that. The problem that I have is that you start earning interest on your debt from the minute you start at university. So by the time he'd left, after 4 years, it had already grown massively. Now, if there was no interest on the debt, then it would have made sense to have used the £10,000 to pay down the debt and to work really hard to get rid of the debt. But the way it's set up, he's just going to have to sit it out now until 30 years has gone by and the debt gets wiped. So, and the other thing, just as a side, I was doing my daughter's tax return yesterday. She just had a pay rise. She just tipped into a 40% taxpayer. She works really hard. She saves really, really hard. And she's paid 9% tax on her savings over £500. So £74 of her savings has also gone to student debt, which I wouldn't have a problem with if it was reducing the debt, but it just disappears. It just vaporizes. There's no motivation to get that debt down because you can't. It's too big.
And of course, the tax threshold mission creep is another thing, isn't it? Listen, what a call. We'll go to Michael in Bronsgrove, and then we'll get Tim's reaction to your call and Michael's as well. And Andy, if we get the chance before the bottom of the hour. Michael, is it fair, this system, Michael?
Oh, definitely not. There's loads wrong with it. Your callers have covered that really, really well. The point I made to your researchers when I texted in originally was that for all its faults, and there are loads of them, I won't repeat what others have said, I think I personally would rather have this system than the one that I went through and the one that it sounds like you went through. Martin Lewis made a really good point on Question Time a number of years ago. This isn't really a debt, in a sense, because they don't send the bailiffs in if you stop paying it. And yes, you're accruing interest, and the decision to put up the interest rates was catastrophic for how this whole program works. But ultimately, if you can't pay this back, you don't pay this back, and your credit file is not affected. And as I say, nobody's sending in collectors to steal your television from under you. Whereas when you have other debts and you lose your job, you find that that's what comes down on you. This time round with the, it's probably a graduate tax. I think that was the way Martin Lewis was encouraging people to think of it. If you think of it like a graduate tax, then the more you earn, the more you pay. because, as your callers have said, you pay 9% of your earnings over roughly 27 grand. So if a student walks out of a university into a £30,000 a year job, and they'll do very well to do that, you know, they're paying like 30 quid a month, which is not the biggest sum in the world. Now, I appreciate that doesn't bring the debt down, and it does mean that if your wages don't appreciate much more than 30 grand over your lifetime, then you're going to be paying this thing for as long as it takes till it's eventually wiped off. But I compare it to what I went through 30 years ago, where, you know, my son's fortunate enough to have, he's at university now, he's fortunate enough to have two parents that have decent jobs that we can support him really well. He's only going to come out with the debts that he's got from his tuition fees and his maintenance loan and nothing else. Other students he's living with, they're having to get part-time jobs, they've already got overdrafts, they've got credit cards, and they're still wondering how they pay for all the things that they have to pay for. When I went to university, I was given a grant of roughly £2,000 for each of the 3 years. I had to borrow the maximum student loans, which in those days was £1,000. And then when I began my proper job after graduating, I found I was paying back, in those days, sort of £60-70 a month instantly. And obviously, because I kept my employment, I had to keep paying that right the way through, which then meant, as a young professional, I couldn't afford a car and I couldn't afford my own place to live, partly because the limited funds I was having were going out the door exponentially proportionately higher because of the money I had to pay back under the regime that I studied under. If I had to choose between the two, I'd rather be my son than me.
Right. Yeah. Let's get a quickie from Andy as well. Then we'll throw it to the professor. Andy in Manchester, talking about your daughter. Tell us the situation.
Well, very similar to Fiona. I mean, my daughter graduated 6 years ago. I think she's paid something like £24,000 back in interest payments because she hasn't paid anything off the loan. She owes more today than when she started. And my point, Nicky, was these loans have been sold out privately to the banking system, who then have, you know, basically the right to put the interest rates up. The interest rates are absolutely ridiculous, what they're charging. And I put in my text, it's like Leadbreaker and Co., because these poor students will never be rid of these debts. They will owe this money forever, and they'll just pay interest forever. And I think, you know, we've got to understand what Mike was saying is one thing, but, you know, that wasn't the case, was it, really? We got rid of them debts quite quickly, and if you worked hard, you got rid of it. My daughter could be paying this debt forever. She probably will be paying it forever. And I just think the fact that the private banking industry are making huge amounts of interest of this really needs to be looked at, because that is scandalous. And they're making money out of people who, like Fiona said, are never going to pay the debt back. And you can't pay the debt back. It's ridiculous.
Forever on the never never. Tim, listen to these callers stepping up to the plate. Any thoughts?
Well, I'm always full of admiration for people who are willing to come on and tell their tales like this. Meatloaf famously said that 2 out of 3 ain't bad. And two of your callers are on the money, but I'm afraid, Andy, you're not right. The debts are still held by the government.
It's a debt out of hell.
It's a debt out of hell, absolutely. Boom, boom. We're on a roll here this morning. The government still holds the debt. The only bit that was sold off was some of the very, very early loans that Michael had, where you had to pay back a certain amount. But all the rest, the ones that are collected by HMRC, it goes, whoever you want to blame for this, is very clear. It's the government debt. The interest rate is set by the government. It's collected by the government and it goes to the government. He is, of course, right in all other respects, as were Fiona and Michael. So, Fiona, your advice to your son was great. Do not use the £10,000 to pay off your debt early. All it is a donation to the government, because your child is owes more and it will all get forgiven in 30 years. My best advice to Fiona's kid is just don't open the envelope. It's going up. It'll probably go up for a long time. It's silly. And that's why I'm proposing it doesn't go up at all, because there's no point in it going up. We just write it off at the end. All we're doing is making Fiona and their child miserable for 30 years for no good reason. But Michael is right that this is not hard debt. And I really want to say to anybody who's 17 and thinking of going to university and going, oh, this sounds very scary. Michael is spot on. This is not hard debt. No one can come and take your house, take your car. If you earn nothing, you pay nothing. So in that sense, Michael is quite right. The system needs tweaking. That's what I've tried to do. It doesn't need throwing away. We don't want an American system where you borrow money and if you don't repay it back, they really will turn up and seize your car or your house. The only thing I'd say to Martin Lewis, who isn't on this program but has been quoted, is what Branwyn said earlier. The current system is not a graduate tax, and it's not a graduate tax because kids from poor families end up borrowing more money. So they're more likely to be paying for all the 30 years. Whereas there's a chance that Michael's kid or your kid or my kid, who've only borrowed the basic amount, they will pay it off within the 30 years, and then it stops being a tax on them. So at the moment, people from poorer backgrounds pay for more years. And that's something Branwen highlighted at the beginning. I think that's a terrible system. I get rid of that by saying the kids from the poorest backgrounds get a grant to live on, not a loan to live on. And I think that is really important. There's no social justice when the people from the poorest societies, the poorest families have to pay the most back.
I'll bring you the Department for Education statement shortly, some more texts, some more great calls, and some more from Professor Tim Leunig as well. Get in touch. Is the system fair? It's 9:34.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And here is the news from Dina Campbell.
Thank you, Nikki. The Lebanese Prime Minister Najib Mikati has welcomed calls from the UK and other major Western and Arab nations for an immediate 21-day ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. It's hoped it will give time for further talks aimed at ending the conflict across the Israel-Lebanon border. The Met Police says an 18-year-old man has been charged with murder after a schoolboy was stabbed to death in southeast London. 15-year-old Dejon Campbell died from his injuries after being attacked in Woolwich on Sunday. The Ministry of Justice says that almost 40 prisoners who'd breached restraining orders were wrongly let out of jail under the government's early release scheme. It says most are now back in prison and it's working urgently to return the remaining five to custody. The BBC understands that one of the world's richest people, Elon Musk, has not been invited to the government's International Investment Summit next month because of social media posts he made during the recent riots. The summit aims to attract tens of billions of pounds of investment. Time for sport with Katie Smith.
We didn't lose, but it feels like a loss, says Christian Eriksen. He scored Manchester United's only goal in their 1-1 opening draw in the Europa League against Dutch side Twente. But he was also at fault for their second half equaliser. Eriksen added they looked like they wanted it more. That can't be right. In the League Cup, Liverpool faced Brighton in the fourth round. It's after they thrashed West Ham 5-1 at home. Arsenal beat Bolton by the same scoreline and they take on Preston next. All the fixtures from the fourth round can be seen on the BBC Sport website and app. In cricket, England say Test captain Ben Stokes is on track to be part of the series against Pakistan. It starts in 12 days' time. He had a scan yesterday as he continues to recover from a hamstring injury. And some history in Major League Baseball. The ball that Japanese star Shohei Ohtani hit as he became the first player to hit 50 home runs and steal 50 bases in a season has been put up for auction. It has a starting bid of $500,000, so that's around £375,000. But there is an option to purchase it privately for £3.4 million. The record for a baseball is currently just under $2 million. That was for Mark McGuire's 70th home run ball of 1998.
Matt Shawley.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
We are looking for a member of Matt's Parliament for New Forest East. Mick has got a claim. Hello, Mick.
In 1997, I proposed in a little hotel. It was actually in the bathroom.
What?
We were getting ready for dinner and I wanted it all to be sort of sorted before we went in and celebrated.
Lisa Nadi, such a safe culture major as well.
We're toughening up the system to make sure that people who are unfit owners can't become football club owners.
Matt Shawley.
Monday to Friday from 2
on BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker
to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Nikki Campbell.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Let me tell you about what we are going to discuss and what you and me are going to talk about at 10 o'clock. We are going to talk about end-of-life care, your experience. The comedian Janie Godley, who I know well, who is funny as funny, a wonderful human being. She announced on social media yesterday that she is now receiving end-of-life care. 63 years old. That's all from Glasgow. She's been living with stage 4 ovarian cancer. And she's been receiving palliative care in hospital. She's now going to go into a hospice. She said that she couldn't take any more and that it's difficult to speak about, but now she's wanted to thank those who've cared for her, from doctors and nurses, Macmillan team, and even the cleaners on the wards. She says, it's devastating news to know I'm facing the end of life, but we all come to an end sometime. obviously extremely emotional, difficult time for families in this position. Maybe you've been in this position as well. It's not just the last day, but it's the final weeks as well that we want to talk about. It can be beautiful and uplifting when someone reaches that stage as well, no matter your faith, no matter your religion, no matter if you have none of the above. But it's also, it can be really rewarding and valuable profession for those that work within it. Unending admiration for those people. If that's you, I'd love to hear from you as well. Maybe it's something you're navigating right now. Maybe you're in good health at the moment, drawing up a plan so your family know your wishes at the end. Maybe as you get older, you think about it more and more and more. Ask you for a friend. So I want to tap into what end-of-life care is like in Britain today. The options available, the personal decisions people make. End-of-life care, your experiences. It would be so good to hear for other people as well. 9:39.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Call free 08085 909 693. Text 85058. Text will be charged at your standard message rate.
Message on WhatsApp 08085 909 693.
Visit bbc.co.uk/5liveterms
for our terms of use and privacy notice.
We're talking about student debt. Is the system fair? We've got a man who's produced some really interesting ideas on this, and he's hoping the government are listening right now so that they can pick up the phone and say, come in and have a chat. Really interesting ideas. Professor Tim Leuning is with us, and Cathy in Nottingham is with us, and Eddie is with us, and Catherine near Maidenhead is with us as well. And Catherine, good morning to you. Hi, Eddie. Hi, Cathy.
Hi.
So Catherine near Maidenhead, kick it off for us in this half hour. And it's great to have Tim listening to all this. On you go, Catherine.
Well, I've got a couple of points to make, actually. Well, two or three. One is my son has just applied for his mortgage. He's 25. We paid for his education, and we said, once you've done your education, you're on your own, you can do your own student loan, you can do this, that and the other. So yes, they are right. He has got a good job, and he's gone to go and get a mortgage. But as promised, they always thought that the mortgages wouldn't be taking into account their student loans. That's what everybody was always told, because I think we were reluctant about it. And the mortgage company won't pay him what he needs to buy the flat that he needs because of his student loan and what he has to pay for his student loans. They do take it into consideration. But, you know, another point is most of the children that I know, you know, I'm in my late 50s, so all the kids have now just finished university. They've all done 8 or 9 hours a week at university. They're paying astronomical sums to go to university. They're doing 8 or 9 contact hours a week, so the rest of the time they're just doing what university students do. We could condense it, I'm sure, to a couple of years and make them do 16, 20 hours a week. And so they have one less year of student loans. Both of my children have both been through university. They have not rated at all their education on it. Most of them don't go into lectures anymore. They all do them online. So now it's impeding my son getting his mortgage.
So, yeah, and of course, they're customers now.
We're paying it. Yes, exactly. So we're now paying for his extra part of his mortgage to put down, where we should have just done the university bit, because he's just in getting massive amounts of interest on it. It's ludicrous. And they're not getting the service. They're not getting a good service out of university.
Which they're paying for. Absolutely. Eddie is a university lecturer. Eddie, bring it on. Good to have you on. Is the system fair, Eddie?
Well, I say that last call has taken me back a little bit with the contact hours. I think during COVID, yes, contact hours were very much reduced. But now we're back to each module will have a minimum of about 40 hours of direct contact time, but each module involves 200 hours of work for each student. So
that's not what I'm hearing from the kids. That's not what I'm hearing. And they're all recording them and doing them from their beds on their mobile phones or their laptops.
So we no longer do live streams of our lectures. All of our lectures are done in person. You only get recorded as attendant if you actually turn up to the lecture theatre. The recordings are shown afterwards, but you don't have any attendance record. So if it comes to you having issues with exams and needing mitigating circumstances, the evidence is put forward that you never actually attended any of the in-contact time.
I think students are quite clever on that one. They definitely make sure my daughter did her minimum attendance to get hers. But anyway, you know, that's semantics. They're not saying that it's good enough education in it to warrant the fees and the percentages that they're having to pay back. And I know one of your other callers mentioned earlier that, you know, university, you're coming out of university for lawyers, for doctors, for various people that have to go to university to get their degrees, and I totally understand that. But when you're saying about a few, my stepson is trying to get a degree in law. He's got his degree in law, and he's trying to get a job in law. But we offer so many thousands and thousands of law degrees that we've got a very massive amount of people trying to go for very few jobs. And now they've extended so not only is it law degrees, that people are doing law conversions on top of a history or an art degree or an English degree to do law. So you've even got even more students doing it. So it's all very well saying, let's pay for this to get a law student because we need to have lawyers. We've got way too many of them. Way too many. So these kids are backing up their law.
Lawyers, you've just given us a phone-in. Oh, my goodness, way too many lawyers. Eddie, let me tell you. Let me ask you. I'm not going to tell you anything.
Students want to be lawyers.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Of course, and who wouldn't? Well, there's another one.
Yes.
Eddie, what a great job, you know? No further questions, my lad. Eddie, what about the students with lower socioeconomic backgrounds, from lower socioeconomic backgrounds in all this? Because, you know, they're part of your flock.
Yeah, the university I work in, our main cohort are students from a lower socioeconomic background. And a lot of the time, there are people coming into university and they're the very first person in their family to attend university. And we, as the staff here, really feel duty-bound to make sure that coming to university is a life-changing experience for them, to get them out into the workforce, to get them into high-paid professional jobs. And it's becoming harder and harder and harder. The university I work at has undergone 2 voluntary exit schemes over the last 4 years. So our staff numbers have dropped significantly. And as a result, our workloads have gone up. And now we're awaiting, we've been given an announcement of another 120 academic staff to be made mandatory redundant in November. So once that goes through, then our staff load is going to be even lower, and the workload for the academic staff at universities is becoming unmanageable. And our main kind of financial problem is our low student intakes at the moment. But the responsibility for that in the universities is falling onto the academic staff, not the management of the university. They turn to us and say, you have to do the marketing for your program. You have to get the students in. And if you don't get the students in, then your program might be getting cut. So that's just adding more and more and more workload on. But it's really frustrating because the students that we have coming in, they can't afford higher fees. They simply can't afford it. A lot of our students are working one or even two jobs at the same time as trying to attend university. And it's, I can't imagine our student numbers going up if fees went up.
In the nicest possible way, we have to rethink the whole university thing. When Tony Blair came in and he didn't want 18-year-olds out of work, he said everybody should be going to university and having the chance to go to university. We put way too many people now through university. There's too much peer pressure for these kids to go to university that A, probably don't have the academic ability to do it, and B, can't afford to do it. Many kids are going to university so the jobs that we've got out there that aren't necessarily university-level jobs are now being put at university level. So all the kids that have done their university degrees are taking jobs that actually were never university degrees in the first place. They're all expecting to earn 30, 35, 40, 50,000 coming out of university, having done their 3 years.
Okay, Catherine, I hear you.
Jobs, Eddie, that are only worth about
25. I want to bring Cathy in. Hang on a sec. I want to bring Cathy in. We're going to get Tim's view on all this in a second, and Jag and Gillingham as well. Cathy, Nottingham University, great university, great for medicine as well. And your daughter is just going into third year. It's a very competitive university too. So what's her situation?
So none of them have actually gone to Nottingham University. We're based in Nottingham. My eldest daughter went to a university in York, and she doesn't have a high-paying job, but she had to have a degree. She's a nurse. So she was fortunate to be one of the last ones that got the bursary from the NHS. And she, at the same time, was doing full-time in nursing training, also had to get a job. Because even though she got a bursary from the NHS, it meant that that just reduced her maintenance loan. She had to get a job because we still had loads of children at home that we couldn't afford to just give her the money she needed to pay her rent to be at university. She's now got a job as a nurse, obviously. She, unfortunately, she qualified in the October as COVID arrived. So she's been very fortunate in that sense that she's always worked because she went into university to a degree that actually guaranteed her a job at the other end. And she has got a mortgage. She's got a young family. She's not particularly old. And the tiny amount they take from her salary hasn't actually affected her mortgage. So because it's a tiny amount, because she earns a tiny salary, even though she's obviously got a degree. My next daughter down went off to university to do an arty degree, which seems to be a lot of callers that hold that to less value. However, she's now an art teacher in a secondary school, and she's got an illustration degree. She then went on to do a teacher training. She's then done the ECQ training for 2 years in school. Her salary is appalling for the hours she puts in, but she couldn't do that job without a degree. And she also had to get jobs because I still had a younger daughter at home and couldn't afford to pay her rent for her. My third one, slight anomaly, not quite sure what she's going to do. She's very art-based. She's very creative. She has, obviously, we've given her the same opportunity. She undernarred about getting an apprenticeship, couldn't find anything she fancied. She's gone to university. My issue is that I've had to financially support all three of my daughters through university for no benefit to me whatsoever. And actually, two out of three of them, well, my argument would be that they will all be taxpayers, so they're all going to be paying into the pot because two out of three of them have got jobs where they'll, for life, be paying into the pot for the hard work they'll have to put in. And their friends at university got the full maintenance loan, didn't have to quite struggle so much, and it's not making any difference. They're still doing the same thing. So my issue, I suppose, as a parent, I listened to Martin Lewis, obviously, and he said, don't worry about the student loan. Forget about it. Don't look at it. You're going to pay a tiny amount, and after 35 years, it'll get written off. So that's basically what I told them. Don't worry about it, because you've got to do it because you need that job at the other end. You can't do it. You can't do your job at the other end without that degree.
I absolutely applaud what you're saying, and I absolutely think that the government should be paying nurses, and I think they should be paying PGCEs for teachers. I don't think they should be paying their own.
My one that became an art teacher had to move home because they gave her £3,000 to live on for the year that she was doing her teacher training at university. That wasn't nothing.
I want to bring Anil in. Anil in London, good morning to you. Loads of really interesting calls.
Good morning,
Hi, Anil, on you go. Very quickly, if I can ask you.
Yeah, so look, my perspective is with student debt is it's about personal accountability for whoever the student is. Obviously, they're going and pursuing education to pursue opportunity, but that part of that is understanding the debt they're going to accumulate and figuring out the job opportunities that will be available to them and how long it will take them to pay off that debt. I've heard a lot of statements from different people saying, you know, that there's too much debt and it takes too long for students to pay it off. If you want to be educated, if you want opportunity, you've got to take on that responsibility and you've got to figure out how long it's going to take for you to pay it off. And it is that person's responsibility. I don't think we should be making excuses for students. If they want to pursue education, they're going to have to take on the debt.
Okay.
Can I come in there, Eddie,
you can come back in a wee second, but I think Tim's got to go very shortly, which is terrible news. But Tim, you've heard a lot of calls there, Tim Leunig, the good professor, and I'm sure you want to comment on some of them. Great contributions.
I have. There are some great contributions, as you say. I say to people thinking about which subject to study, it does matter what you study in terms of your chance of getting a job. If you do an arts degree, teaching is about your best bet. Arts degrees, they are less likely to lead to a high-paying job than
law. Does it not depend on where you study it as well?
Not as much as people think. If you study English at Oxford, you will earn less than someone who studies business at Bournemouth.
Interesting.
Now, I don't think we knew that 15 years ago, but we've matched the data. We definitely don't have too many lawyers. Lawyers are the third best paying degree you can do, beaten only by medicine and economics. There's a lot of myths out there about what you should study and what you shouldn't study. Nursing is actually a good subject to study financially. It's above average, particularly for women. It's ranked 11th out of 29. The Institute for Fiscal Studies have published the estimates by gender for 29 different subjects. So if people are interested in that, they can go look them up. As you say, I do have to run. I have to do something else at 10 o'clock. And I just want to say I'm very sorry not to have heard what Jag had to say, because he comes from Gillingham and that's where I grew up. And it's always nice to hear someone from your hometown.
Come back any time. Thank you very much indeed, Tim. And good luck.
Invite me back and I will. Thank you.
With all this. Cheers now. Go on then, Jag, and I'll come to Eddie in a second. Jag, say your piece.
Hi. I'm actually quite angry at what I'm listening to right now. My daughter's just started university and we're helping her financially. I have agreed, well, I have told her I'm going to repay her student debt in full, all three of my daughters. I can't afford it. I'm going to work for it and I'm going to repay it. This thing of it's a potato patata. Yeah, whether it's a tax, whether it's a benefit, whatever it is, we are hinging a 9% tax on our children to study. Now, that 9% over 30 years, if you take average earning, take £4,000 today, over 30 years, that's over £130,000. Why am I going to agree my child to pay over twice what she's going to borrow for the benefit of what paying a small, who says it's a small amount? Is a small amount to whom exactly? It's all relative to what you're going to spend and how much you're going to earn. Right, what the cost of living is, what the cost of living was 30 years ago and what it is today is a massive difference. Right, and then to suggest that these kids should be paying it. Hang on, we have had two elections fought on immigration. Why? Because we don't have enough skills in this. There's a skills gap in this country. Yet we're disincentivizing our kids. Don't study because you're going to have a debt. Go and do an apprenticeship. Go and do something else, but don't study because you're going to have a debt. We should be encouraging them. And, you know, to the last point about what to study, how about you incentivize, if you're going to do medicine, if you're going to do banking, if you're going to do optometry or dentist, it's going to be free. Go and study. Go and try your hardest and become that, and we'll encourage you because we need it. We're importing it from other countries. We are persecuting people to come here to work for us. How dare you come to this country? And yet, we're charging our children £50,000 in interest, and we have no conscience to say, yeah, we should be paying it. Of course they should pay. Why the hell should you pay it? Graduate and leave this country. Go somewhere else.
I think the point is with the debt that my students, my daughters that have the debt, will never pay it off. They're paying a small percentage of their salary every month as a contribution to the government. They're never, ever going to... They might have hundreds. Well, my middle one's got probably about £80,000 worth of debt. She's a teacher. She's never, ever, that's the basic debt, not whatever they've added on since. She's never, ever going to pay it off. The gentleman earlier
the problem,
said, don't bother opening the envelope. All it was the government paid it, and she's making a tiny contribution.
Well, listen, everybody. I did promise to come back to Eddie, our university lecturer. Eddie, over to you.
So, yeah, I fully sympathise with what's been said there. So when the fees were brought in back in 2012, that was modelled on the cost of how much it is to run a university and a university programme and on how many students were coming in. And at that time, we had a huge number of 18-year-olds coming out of A-levels and into university, and that number was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So financially, it was good for the universities. But since then, the number of 18-year-olds has dropped and the number of 18-year-olds choosing to go to university has dropped, meaning that the system does no longer work for universities. One solution for that is to up the fees, but the students cannot take on more debt. It's just not fair to be asking people to pay more than they're already paying. Huge amounts. The system needs to be looked at. When we had the banking crisis in 2008, the banks were deemed too big to fail. Why has the government decided that the university sector, however, has to sort out its own house? The government needs to step in and look at the system that our university sector is in and help. help the universities keep going and help the students get in there, get the qualifications to step out into those professional careers that then will drive our country forward, to drive the economy. We need the university sector supported, and it's not being supported at all.
Thank you. Thank you all very much indeed. Professor Tim Leunig, the author of this report on undergraduate fees. Have a look. You'll find it online. We contacted the Department for Education. They gave us this statement. We will create a secure future for our world-leading universities as engines for growth and opportunity so they can deliver for students, local communities and the economy. The government is determined that the higher education funding system should deliver for our economy, for universities, for students. We will look carefully at all options and come forward with proposals. We will announce further details on student finance for the 2025-2026 academic year in due course. That was that.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Nikki Campbell.
The voice of the UK.
End of life care. Your experience. Janie Godley, one of the very funniest and the very nicest, has revealed she is now receiving end of life care. I've done a couple of podcasts with her and the sides split long after the mics have closed. She's a one-off. 63 years old from Glasgow and living with cancer, recently been receiving palliative care in a hospital, will now go into a hospice. Very personal video. She said she couldn't take any more and that it's difficult to speak about. She's now wanted to thank those who have cared for her, from doctors and nurses, Macmillan team, and the cleaners on the wards, everybody. She says, it's devastating news to know that I'm facing the end of life, but we all come to an end sometime. And she went on to thank those who had supported her and her family. Now, obviously, an extremely emotional, difficult time for families in this position. Maybe it's something you are navigating right now or have done recently or less recently. Maybe you're in good health at the moment, but thinking about it, drawing up a plan. So I want to tap into what end-of-life care is like in Britain today. All corners of these islands, the options available, the personal decisions people make. End-of-life care, your experience.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Call free 08085 909 693. Text 85058. Text will be charged at your standard message rate. Message on WhatsApp 08085 909 693. Visit bbc.co.uk/5life terms for our terms of use and privacy notice.
And here's the news from Dina Campbell.
Thank you, Nikki. The Lebanese Prime Minister Najib Mikati has welcomed calls from the UK and other major Western and Arab nations for an immediate 21-day ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. It's hoped it will give